Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Abracadabra, Create What You Speak, with Ilan Azulay, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Abracadabra, Create What You Speak. I'm Ilan Azulay, your host, a spiritual mentor and a sound therapist for you who are ready to reclaim your power, to bring your gifts to the world and to shine your gifts and to bring them to light. And this is a spiritually empowered program. It's to empower you who are ready and to bring people who can shine the light and bring their gifts to the world, whether they're spiritualists, artists, scientists, anybody, everybody has a gift. How do we discover our gifts? And today I have a wonderful guest in the film business niche, Dr. Rebecca Smith. She is a world-renowned film festival doctor. She kind of cornered that term and that niche in quite a remarkable way, and we'll talk with her. She found her niche and drove her business to increasing heights through mastering spiritual and business practices. Now, this is an interesting combination because many times people don't associate spirituality with business, spiritual and physical, and the contrary is correct. It's how do we infuse spirituality with everything that we do in this physical realm. So I want to welcome Dr. Rebecca Smith. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, how are you?
I'm wonderfully great, thank you. How are you feeling?
I'm good, thank you. Over here, it is in the evening, so it's very, very, very chilly and very cold at the moment, but it's very nice that I am doing what I love, speaking to you. So great to be here.
Well, that's a thank you very much. well, you're in England, right?
At the moment, yes. So I'm in at the moment, and we're in lockdown part two. So it's not quite the same as it was before, thank goodness, both in terms of the amount of deaths and all that kind of drama, but there is a little bit more flexibility. So it's just very weird because just the weather's very different, because before it was really, really warm, and now it's really cold. Quite a big difference.
So on the second lockdown, yeah, it's quite a drama, and I'd say it's I don't know, what do you think? You think it's a drama, it's a big how do you feel about the coronic times? How do you feel about that?
Well, it's definitely real, and yes, it exists, and my heart goes out to those who have lost their lives during this time. I know people that have had it, both severe and mild, and people might think they've had it but weren't sure. People do confuse it right now because of the time of year with the flu, there's a lot of false positive tests in the UK, so people actually say they have it but they haven't got it. So there's all that confusion. It's all just very much like nothing is certain, nothing is stable right now. Everything changes every day, so I think it's really built us up to be resilient and grounded people, that we have to, you know, really now control how we respond to this situation.
Yeah.
Because we can't control it. Nobody can, not even the government.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, we can go, you know, I see it as this virus came and, you know, got promoted. You thought he'll be eliminated really fast. And then he got promoted to a political offices, to religious offices. Now I'm staying. So he likes it. So he stays around, you know, so we are evolving. We are evolving in adapting to situations. You know, many people would say, oh, I want things to go back to how they were. And, you know, they won't go back to how they were. It is how do we shift our perception to continue, because we are that kind of species. We survive. And then once we realize that we're surviving, we thrive, right? We're looking for to thrive, or we're looking for thrivation. Well, whatever, if there is such a word. So, Rebecca, thank you for being here. We are here also to talk about your new book, Born to Do It.
Yeah,
right?
Thank you.
This is great. And you come from academia. You have a PhD in film business, right? PhD in film business?
That's right. So the PhD is in film and audience research. So my thesis is actually on the director Quentin Tarantino,
I
and
read that he was your mentor, film
he's
mentor.
like my icon.
Yeah, I hear you.
So he's brilliant. So it's a really interesting PhD. It looks at how his fans respond emotionally to his films and what the difference is between, say, people who aren't fans and just general cinema goers. So it's quite a really in-depth, thorough audience research-based PhD. So lots of research with interviewing fans, which is really interesting back in the day. So I'm glad I did that. I did it back in the day, actually, when I say back in the day, but I did it when there was no, big interaction on Facebook. It was the good old-fashioned forums.
Yes, I hear you. I hear you.
So it was very much like, wow, this does feel very old-fashioned compared to how people do things now.
Yeah, that's true. It wasn't there wasn't a lot of accessibility, access. And as we know in films, depends what which films you're doing. You know, if it's feature, it's feature, but access is really the matter here about access. And one of the things that really attracted me about talking with you, because I also come from a film. Well, I don't really come from a film world, but I started my documentary about 10 years ago, and this year, hopefully, things will be a little bit more in a locked position. And then, but what's attracted me more because of the connection to film is your interaction, how you bring spirituality into business. And but the way that you used it, the way that I noticed is you're using spiritual tools. As I read it somewhere in the promo or spiritual tools. Now, here is a question, and it's like, what is spirituality? The first thing that came to me is like, what is spirituality for you? Is spirituality a tool or is spirituality a way of life? And it is because you could, you know, you can make some, if it's a tool, then it's an expandable tool because tool can be replaced. But if it's a way of life, then you know, and then as I was going through your book, I saw how you are focusing on finding the soul's purpose. So why don't you tell me a little bit, tell us a little bit about yourself, because you'll do a better job than I did. And and let's talk and share with me a little about your book. How did you get to, what was your breaking point for spirituality in inclusion?
Well, first of all, I do definitely perceive spirituality to be a way of life, not a tool for the business. Both go hand in hand. You've got the business and you've got spirituality, and that you are one with it, so it's within you. So when you have identified and tuned in to what your soul purpose is, what you're put on this earth to do, what you're born to do, in other words, hence the name of the book, that's when you know what you're supposed to be doing with your life or your career as an entrepreneur or as a strong businesswoman, whatever. And you have to have the right business tools and the right spiritual tools in place, what I perceive, what I've learned over the past 15 years, to really get the business that your heart and soul desires. So that's how I only realized this, like, when I was writing the book recently, put it all into words. I've been feeling it and living it for the past, like 10 years. But before that, I didn't know what that was. And it was when I got a wake-up call from the universe where they showed me what my sole purpose was and I tuned into it without asking, was when things changed. So yes, you're right. I was in the world of academia and I thought what I wanted. This is all based upon what people said I should do, not actually what I wanted,
Yes. We're
was
we're
that
familiar with that oh so much, right?
all the time, 24/7. So I presumed what I wanted to do was move to Wales in Aberystwyth, cold, wet and windy Wales, worse than it is right now, worse than it was, say, in Chicago, but cold, wet and windy Wales, settle down, have a, wonderful life down there, teach, live in the world of academia, and just have a peaceful, quiet life. Then it was the opposite happened. So whilst I was studying for my PhD, it is a quite a lonely, isolating process because you're in your head a lot, you're in your PC a
What's
lot.
lonely? What is lo What's the process that is lonely? The spiritual process or the academia?
No, the academia, because you're writing a lot, it's something you have to do yourself, you email your supervisor, but it's not like it's a group project. It's like you're authoring a book that will change a lot of worlds in terms of academia. So it is a bit like that. It's very isolating, but you know, it's rewarding, but it's very much your own work to do. You've got
Yes,
like
yes, yes.
support groups, but it's not quite the same thing. And a friend of mine was asked to produce and put on a horror film festival at the university by the Wales Council for Film. So he said, "Would you like to help out?" And I was like, "Yeah, it'd be a nice happy distraction from the PhD writing 24/7." So I think it would be a good thing for me to do and to interact with people and see people. And when I was doing that happy distraction, that hobby, and that, you know, like passing the time, was actually my sole purpose. It actually told me that when I was producing the festival, I came alive and I thought, I love doing this. I actually felt myself the first time in forever. I just had this whole change in me and I thought, I'm really enjoying this more than the PhD. I had to think to myself, was it just because it's like in the moment? So whilst at a conference, academic conference, I was a bit bored. But a friend of mine said, isn't academia the best thing in the world? This is the best place to be, isn't it? I thought, nope, it's not. It's the film industry. So as
Was
the
it the
festival
film?
continued,
Was it really the film or the connection with people? Because academia, like you know, you say it's kind of a lonely thing. And was it, would you feel the same thing you think in music? I mean, how?
For me, it was the connection with the whole environment
I
of
see.
the film festival world,
I see,
like
yeah.
producing it, like organizing it all with the team,
I hear you. I
watching
know what you
films
mean
to
by that.
select. I thought, this is where I want to be. I don't want to be in the world of academia because I know it's so different, but I don't feel me that I'm supposed to be destined to do academia. And then as time went on, the PhD actually helped me identify skills in business. And there was a gap in the market that filmmakers didn't know who to turn to help them get their films seen at festivals. So I
Yes.
was like, there's a gap in the market. I can
So you
do
developed
this.
a strategy for that. You develop a strategy on how to get films into, which is great. I mean,
That's right.
you know, it's really great. I know when I start pitching my film few years back, and but just being in the world of document and seeing a film festival and seeing this kind of work and interaction, I mean, to me it was a little too hectic, but that's me. But so yeah, so that is a niche now. So people, but before we get that, horror films, how I mean, do you like horror films, or
Yes,
is
I
it you
do.
do?
Well, if they're done well, because when we were producing the horror film festival, we had a lot of films got sent to us that were not great. There were some brilliant films, but there were some films that were not good. So I know exactly what a really good horror film is after watching so many. I mean, I thought I'd seen millions by the point I finished it, but we saw a hell of a lot of submissions. And there were some, as I said, some gems. There was a brilliant film actually from Wales called Devil's Bridge, which was a very tense and scary feature film. There was Descent was another one, and also one called Kidnapped, which is all like one take in a brilliant way, a Spanish film of a family gets terrorized. You know, it's incredible. So there was some great films, but then you see some films that aren't great. So I've actually be I came became like immune to being scared because we saw so much that I knew what was going to happen.
What makes, you know, don't listen, when I was 10 years old, I decided that I love Jack Nicholson and I watched The Shining when I was 10. I couldn't sleep for years. So what? Now, I can tell, I don't know if you consider that, but for me, it was a horror film. Although you didn't see, it's like in Jaws, you don't see the shark until three quarters of the movie is in, just because the music carries the weight of the feeling of the. What makes a horror film in this niche? Because I, you know, I've never talked with somebody to that extent about horror films, except for one person that I know that is he directs actually horror. But so, what makes a horror film a good horror film? I mean, the text or the scary or the killings or what?
It's more the story and how it's been crafted and executed. So if it's full of
Executed, right?
cliches, if it's full of cliches that we've all seen before, and the audience are one step ahead and know what's going to happen next and predictable kind of dialogue, then that's not very interesting. It'll just lose interest and it'll be boring. If it's one though that really shakes up the genre and puts something unexpected in, like the Babadook is a really good example, because you do not see that twist coming, and the way that it's built up, it's really scary.
I
That's a
see.
good example. So anyone's a good horror film that is really going to be memorable, be very striking and be very interesting is ones which push the boundaries and they're not afraid to shake things up and be disruptive and really show a different vision that isn't full of cliches and the same camera angles, the same final girl, all the things that people know. When it's something fresh and innovative that has a really raw vision and they're not afraid to show it because they're aggressive to show it, that's a good start.
And so the reason I ask that about horror film, because we're a spiritual being having this experience, right? I see us as like a car. Our body is the car, the soul is the driver, right? The soul is the driver. You can put the car on idle while you go to sleep. The person is not dead, but he's not awake. He's an idle position. There are many Kabbalistic terms for what is happening there, understandings. But the reason I ask about that is what we get in is usually what comes out. So the way that I see that and the way that I experience that is if I bring any kind of stuff like that or any other things or any other negative things, it will, for me at least, it will prompt to get similar things out because what comes in has to go out. So how do you juggle that? Was it difficult for you in the beginning? I mean, you are in a you are you're talking about finding your soul's purpose, and I don't know how deep you go in spirituality. Nevertheless, it is something that can affect the way of your present, how you are with another person, how you are with peace. Now, I'm talking with you. You're this sweet, lovely lady that is sitting in England, and I'm speaking with her, and it's exciting to speak with you. And yet, you are in this horror genre. So something doesn't sit right with me, maybe because I'm judgmental. I don't know, but it feels like whatever comes in will come out. And I mean, how does it work with you? How does it?
Totally agree with that. It is pretty much what you put in, you get out. And that's with everything. It doesn't always feel that way sometimes, but it's true. I mean, for example, with horror, my clients aren't always horror film directors or have horror films. We do everything, documentary, short film, fiction, non-fiction, the whole lot, music videos, screenplays as well sometimes. So I see amazing filmmakers who I work with and I see their soul purpose shine through. And I love that I can, with my spiritual kind of techniques that I put into our business, help them on their journeys by adding this kind of sprinkling to the films that we work on to get them seen. It's just a different approach. I think it's good because obviously everyone's got competitors. I mean, my niche is extremely small. But there aren't many people that do what I do, even to this day. Like it's been, what, 10 years on. There's not like there's thousands of us. There's still only like a small handful. But everyone brings their own unique energy to each project and the way that they work and their businesses. So it's like, again, it goes back to the sole purpose is that we each have, everyone has their own sole purpose within them, but it's not identical. Say, for example, if you go to a hairdresser and they both do beautiful haircuts and a big blowout, but although they're mo Well, they both might be absolutely beautiful. They're not identical. There's own unique stamp, and that's the same thing that I bring into my teaching. Is that there aren't many people in the film industry who do draw upon spiritual techniques because not some of them do, but some
That's
of them
right.
don't because they're not in that way inclined, which is fine. They don't have to be, but the way that I do it is to take that approach so we get the best results for our clients because we're one and the same.
So do you find that you have clients that come to you and they're not spiritual, and suddenly they, from working with you, aside from getting their films shown and worked on, suddenly they discover new things like, oh wow, this opened me in completely, totally different way. I mean, you have that because, and on the other side, people say, listen, I just want to get my film done. I understand, I know what I want. This is what I want. This is how I want it. I mean, do you have those two aspects in your work? Do you find it that does that happen?
Yes. So how it tends to happen is those that aren't particularly very spiritually minded or don't live by certain spiritual techniques, they tend to come in and have obviously different energy, which is fine. But then I tend to then bring into our conversations as I work with them, as I work with them for like, about a year sometimes or more, I tend to bring into the conversations, things about how I was manifesting that we'd get a really good result on the festival circuit and we get this certain festival and that festival. And then they think they see it happening in reality, and then they think, oh, so what's this? How do we manifest? So I explain how we manifest in the right way to get the results that we're visualizing and what we're in tune with, and how we let go, and how we don't form particular attachment to it, that we just get results that will be the best for the film. And then it kind of makes them a bit more open-minded, and they're like, oh, I didn't know about that, because it's not
I
what they
see.
were brought up with.
So what was your did you grow did you you're also in LA, coming from LA, right?
That's right. So I can't get to LA at this moment in time because of coronavirus,
Here is
obviously.
LA for you a little bit here. Where you
Beautiful. I'm missing it. The sun. Thank you for that sun. I can't wait to get there, honestly. So yeah, I have an apartment in LA and I'm based there and have an office there. And I'll be moving there permanently when I can get over there. But yes, I'm actually English, obviously, and I was born in Worcestershire and then moved to Wales and now London and now LA. So I'm always back and forth LA, UK all the time. Then the move was going to be in April, but that couldn't happen for the obvious. But yeah, but it won't be too long now. I'll be there very soon.
God willing and thankfully, and you're healthy, thank God. So that's
Yes,
good.
I'm very grateful for that. Very
That's
grateful.
great. So tell me, what was your breaking point? What happened? You were kind of brushing through it that this happened, and your spiritual awakening, you got. What were you? I mean, how were you before, and how did it really shift you? What was going on in your life that this happened? Because everything has a reason. Everything that happens here in the physical realm has a spiritual and reason, a spiritual cause and reason. So what happened with you?
I think actually, although I'm not in the world of academia anymore, and it's not something I'll ever go back to, I've done with it, is that I needed to do that. I needed to go that far and go to Aberystwyth in Wales to then be introduced to the Avatar Horror Festival. If I hadn't done that, there would be no film festival doctor company, nothing would exist. And if Gaz had not created that festival, that was the festival director, Gaz Bailey, if he'd not have done that and asked me, then I would never have known this is what I'm supposed to be doing in my life. And it's amazing. I'm so grateful for him to ask me, but also create this absolute baby that he did all those years ago. So that was the sole purpose when I found out what that was. I didn't know that at the time. It wasn't until later. It wasn't until when I moved to London that I actually got more spiritually in tune, because there's more spiritual kind of communities around there. And the first person that introduced me to the law of spirituality and law of attraction and manifestation was Marie Diamond. So I
You talk
met
about
her,
her in the book, I think.
I do, yes. Marie kindly read it and she loved it, and she has on the front cover a quote, which I'm very grateful for. So that's wonderful. Yeah, so I met with her. She's in the book quite a bit. And we met at an event. Our dear friend and mutual friend Phil introduced us. It was so random at this event. She was there. I'm like, wow, she's a very established woman. And she's great. And she told me about how to raise my vibration, wearing different colors and change my energetic branding. And all this stuff, I was like, what's this? And she said about the secret. I was like, what's the secret? So I didn't know any of this. I just knew about angel cards mainly at the time. But then I got into that world, and I then thought, okay, this is interesting. So then I began to become more like spiritually in tune, and I had like psychic readings and angel card readings, the whole lot. Then obviously you go through the whole journey of who resonates and who doesn't, all that kind of stuff. So it was quite a journey, but I think that really kicked in and it hit home was when I split up with my ex-boyfriend at the time, and that triggered off a bout of depression and just feeling very sad for a long time. And then it was spirituality that saved me and help me get out of that and then become a stronger person, businesswoman, and build up my business. It really helped a lot, and that was through cosmic ordering and feng shui.
What in that you said save? I mean, did you have a good relationship at home? I mean, did you have support, or were you out and about and by yourself, and oh, things happen?
It was kind of more independent, because I mean, my mum and dad supported me, At first, they weren't, well, at first, my dad wasn't really sure. Mum was like, oh, but then they saw it work, and over time it built up and they were fine, you know. So it shows that it's established business. But they were a little bit funny at first, but then it was kind of me to really drive it, because your sole purpose never lets you down. So it always helps you get through any kind of problems or stuck in the rut or whatever happening. So it's always there to help you go in the right direction. So I had to just trust and have the faith. So it doesn't feel like I did at the time, because I was like getting a bit nervous sometimes and worrying. But then when I found this tribe of spirituality and the spiritual kind of teachers that became part of my inner circle, I changed dramatically, and it helped me a lot. I mean, it's been a massive challenge now during the pandemic in terms of getting to LA, because that's been my main thing to, you know, it's a big move there. I've got my apartment already. But because no one tells you what's going on, everything changes every minute, it really is difficult to be grounded. And I've certainly been a challenge, but I'm getting there. It's just another challenge that everyone's going through some kind of thing with that. But then I always know that I just be supportive and all about the right timings of things. And it's always been there to protect you, and you're never going to be alone. You always notice that when your perception widens, when you become more spiritually aligned, you then see how the universe works with you and how you co-create together, and that makes you feel a lot more secure.
Yeah, that's true. I always say that challenging our perception is like going to a gym for our imagination, because it's really
Absolutely.
this muscle of imagination, you know, and imagining is, you know, some people will discredit it because imagination is associated with being a kid, or, oh, stop imagining, stop dreaming, so just do something. And where the power really lies is in our intention, is in our words, in the work that I do. I work with words. How do we say what we say? What place do we inhabit within ourselves when we ask, or when we request for something, or when we do something? Because really, the place that we're in, or how we are with ourselves, defines what we do. You know, kind of like
Exactly.
gives it the, rather than the other way around. Many times we're kind of looking the other way around. You know, growing up in all this social structure, as many, many times people will look at what they do and say, oh, this is me. But it's the other way around, how we are. So let's talk about your book. Okay. When okay, so you understand that that you have a special niche in this, and maybe you and I will talk because of my documentary and stuff like that. That'll be interesting. But you have a niche. How do you come about writing a book? You know, somebody offered you something, and then you're talking about spiritual branding, right? Is that right? Using a
Yeah, so the book happened again. It's like the whole by accident thing. So it's like with my family, my sole purpose and my dream career. So during the pandemic, I became quite inspired to write, because I haven't written for a long time, but I launched a blog on my website. And I was actually asked to contribute to a book that was published in India called Unique: Positive Stories to Inspire You. And they wanted me to share my life story, like a very in-depth interview, not like just a page, but like 10 pages. So it was quite mad. But I was like, okay, sounds like fun. It was actually for a good cause. And a publishing company called Butterfly House Publishing, who published the book, they read it. And she said, wow, you ever thought about you know, writing your own story, telling your own story? I said, no, never. I never really thought about it, because I never really thought about going back to writing or academia for that matter. She said, well, this is quite an interesting story. So maybe think about writing a book, and we can teach you how, and then we can publish it and have an editor, all
It's
that kind of
wonderful.
thing, the whole lot. And I thought, I had a thought, and I was like, well, let me think about it. I know we have time in the pandemic more than I have probably any other time in the world, but this book was inside of me. And then I realized that the feedback I got from that particular interview that she had read in the Indian magazine, they all said, oh, we really resonated with your story, that it helped reduce kind of my fear, she said, of running my own business and isolation whilst running it, and loneliness and getting on edge and worrying. She said it helped me just relax me and ground me. And I was like, oh, the pen has just dropped. That's it. Well, I love everything about the world of business and spirituality, and that's what I do every day, is business spirituality together as one through me and my sole purpose. So I thought, right, I know what I've got to do. I need to write this book that's in me and get it out to the world to help the people. And that is a book which helps you tap into your sole purpose, figure out what it is that you're born to do, and then helps you set up your first business using the right spiritual practices and business techniques.
That's inspiring. That's really wonderful. That's really inspiring. You know, sometimes the process can be backwards. You know, sometimes I remember when I started film, I didn't go to film school, but I had an executive producer that just told me, just buy the camera and we'll sit together, do the film, go shoot. And then he sat with me and taught me film on my film. He gave me film school for like 5 months, every day in my studio in Boston. I lived in Boston at that time. And I learned film on my film as we were working on my film. So this was like a really great blessing. And what happened many times is that, you know, it's like we say, oh, once I, it's similar to what we say, once I feel this, I'll do this. Once I'll feel better, or once I'll feel inspired, I'll do this. But many times it's the other way around. So we have to actually get ourselves into some kind of an action, some kind of a movement that will trigger that spiritual place. And the spiritual place is many times the creative. The creative, I consider the spiritual place. The action, the doing something is the manifesting. So sometimes it is the other way around. Sometimes we have to do something in order to jumpstart our creative process, maybe.
Spot on, you're right there, is that learning on the job is the best way. Because I had like no business background or business training, everything was in the PhD. The PhD helped me to figure out how to identify a gap in the market, that being in the film industry. And also it did help me become like super, super organized, because you have to be able to the paperwork and how you organize the research and all these books you've got to read and how to streamline it. So that's all learning on the job, and you learn those techniques. That was really valuable, but I didn't know any. I went backwards like you just described, because you like learn on the job how to film, etc. Not having in a lecture theatre, but actually on the job. And with regards to, with myself and with my business, it was the same, because it was literally I was not a typical entrepreneur. I was like, entrepreneurs tend to be those who've worked in business for many years and they find the gap and then they use those skills they've accumulated to launch the business and it goes quite quickly. It was the other way around. It was like learning to become an entrepreneur the backwards way. Like, got the sole purpose now, but then how do we figure out how to get it all in shape and all over the shop? The intention was always there, was always strong and always good. But it was just very much like not a linear way.
Yeah, right. Not linear way. That's and so now you are so your clients are you're still working with them, because now it's a virtual. So now you have to have actually a different kind of a niche, because now everything is online. So there are no
That's right.
film festivals that you can go to per se. Do you find it harder or easier to manage and to?
I'd say, to be honest, it's the same, because it involves the same amount of organizing, promotion. It's just not, we're just not there live. A lot of festivals now are starting to open back up in limited capacity, and also the hybrid model. So hybrid is where it's partly online and partly
Oh,
live.
okay. Makes sense.
So it's like maybe like reduced capacity in cinema theater, in cinema screenings or drive-ins or outdoor. And then they're having as well the industry part, like the networking and the masterclasses and the industry panels online to a global audience that can't get over there because of travel restrictions. So it's working well, and had to adjust very quickly, because when this all kicked off, the pandemic, I was at the Cinequest Film Festival in San Jose, which is a brilliant Oscar qualifying film festival. Amazing people, really, really good. And halfway through that, to reschedule it to August, because the pandemic was just about to kick off. It was in March the 16th, it's just right at the height of it, and it was really stressful. Every day we're talking about coronavirus, every single day drives you mad. But it was like, what's going on? Because every festival from then on had to reschedule, cancel the whole lot. It was insane. But then it was all a case of them moving online, and some of them did it really well. Some of it was new, so it was all very much like trial and error, as you said, learn on the job. And some did it really well, so everyone was different. But they adapted really well and really quickly, because they didn't have much time, but they did it well by able to put everything on the right kind of show. So I did the same, because I actually, it was happening every day, and I was like, oh my God. And I went to the very last festival, I think, in the whole world that went live, which was the Idlewild Film Festival in California at the in the middle of March, and it was everything then stopped, but I went to the last one. I also went to the first festival in the UK that went up live, because I was making sure I was there in August, which was great. But yeah, there was no massive difference, just having to adapt to the online world, but also the filmmakers adapt to this new
Yeah,
normal for the time being.
that's right.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, well, I mean, so you don't go out. So you're doing all really all the preparations, talking to all the people and everything, but you just don't go out. You're just pretty much at home. So, I mean, that's kind of, I mean, there are going to be a lot of things that are going to stay, remote, like all these meetings, all these things that can be done virtually. But this is really where we discover really what is meaningful. You know,
Yes.
before the coronic era, many people were just dive like in their iPhones, iPads. You know, I don't know you, who you are. Don't look at me. Don't talk to me. Don't touch me. Don't smile at me. And now it's rediscover really what's important, what's really crucial is the connection, because this is really what we long for. This is really what we're designed to be connected, to belong. Do you find this in how the film industry involved? Do you find that as well? That evolution of connection, the topics, even the horror topics. I don't know. Maybe I don't know how it will work in horror, but oh, I really feel for you. Let me kill you. No, I'm just being. But do you find it also in film industry, this change in?
Yes, there has been a shift that has been a lot more collaborative. Film is always collaborative, you know, all the time, but some people don't always make the effort, but now it's been very much a big collaboration. When the pandemic began in the middle of March, everybody then began to give free workshops, free support groups, free
Yeah,
talks, free
I
webinars, you
remember
know,
I was on that too. Yeah.
Coming together as a team and coming together as one, and it felt lovely. There was no like any bad energy. It was very supportive. It's still there now, even though film production has opened up in the States and in the US and the UK, people are still, you know, they're coming together as one in this together. It's not just one country that's got it, like China. It's the whole of the world that's been affected.
Yes.
So that's why they've been a lot more supportive and coming together communally. And it's nice to see that because it wasn't always there. It was there to a degree, but now it's a lot more evident and more visual, more vocal about it. So I'm glad that that's happened because I think it has put a shift in things. The pandemic has taught us a lot of things about
Yeah,
ourselves
for
and our
sure.
communities.
For sure.
One thing when it has proved, and what my book does mention, not in the book, but now I can say it now, is that when the pandemic kicked off, it shows that you can't rely on anybody but yourself. There is no job for life anymore.
That's right.
That's not guaranteed. You've got to
Job
work
for
on it
life?
yourself.
Well, I think that was starting earlier, even, you know, people that companies were, f I don't know how in England, but yeah, but I know what you mean. Yeah. There was no job. Yeah, things shifted.
Exactly.
So the book, so what is the book really giving to a person who is seeing us now? And we're talking about the book, and they're in the film industry, or they're in spirituality, and they maybe, what is the book? Is the book a guide? This is like kind of gave me. It's like a book is like almost like a benchmark guide. It's like.
That's right. So it's definitely a guide. It's a self-help book. I think of it as a how-to book because it gives you in the book worksheets at the end, like to make your notes, because there are tasks at the end of each chapter to help you tune into your soul purpose at the beginning, to help you get the hang of cosmic ordering of manifestation and feng shui, the whole lot. So it's very much a very well-organized book. And it's for those kind of people who have maybe dabbled in spirituality before or know of it or have done bits but don't know how to take it to next level, and the book tells them how to do that, and it's for their business. So it teaches you at the beginning to how to tap in and tune into your soul purpose, so you know by the end of the book what it is and how to start, and also you'll have the tools then in the toolbox to launch your first business and put in the essential practices of business that you need to put in there, business practices and spiritual techniques that will help get the results you want for your clients and yourself. And just generally get yourself in a routine where you'll integrate spirituality into your business infrastructure.
So we say spirituality, and we talked until now spirituality, spirituality, and it's just like Spirituality, to give you an example of a word that is similar in a very generic term, is like when people say, on the contrary, people say PTSD, right? There's so much that can go into PTSD, right? So there's so much that can go into spirituality. So if you're watching now, you know, for example, one of the things that I say about spirituality, how does spirituality manifest? One of the things is mindfulness. Is to be mindful and aware, because really this work, the spiritual, I come from pushing spirituality and pushing mindfulness and awareness into consciousness, right? And you're coming here with a tangible thing of filmmaking. I'm filmmaking. Okay, so I'm a filmmaker. So it's also when we do the business, when we do business, any kind of business, it's really mindfulness, is being aware. It's how do we relate to other people? How do we relate to ourselves? What kind of practice do we have? Is it an honest practice? Is it all these kind of things? So when you're speaking spirituality techniques, maybe you can share with us, give me one things or two things, or one thing that you're talking about in the book that can be somewhat a tangible point where we can take it from here.
So one of the things I mention is cosmic ordering. That's in chapter 7.
Okay.
And cosmic ordering is literally placing an order with the universe. So one of my mentors, and she's actually a very, very wonderful author, and she's published her own book called Cosmic Ordering Made Easier, How to Get More of What You Want More Often. So I came across her when I wanted to look into cosmic ordering more deeply, because I'd heard about it, that people say you put like a list together and then it all comes together. I didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. But she, in her book, it's incredible, and she teaches you how to place your cosmic orders. So what it is essentially, asking the universe for what you want and it arrives. So it's like going to a restaurant. So you order pizza, chips and lemonade. That's what you want. You place the order, then it arrives. It's the same thing. So she says that what you do with this technique she taught me in the book is you say, what I really want is a car parking space when I arrive into Larchmont Village in Los Angeles. At the end, you say, for the good of all concerned. And you have to say that, she says, because that will ensure that no one should ever lose out in order for you to gain.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Mm-hmm. So when you say that, it's a fair order. So it's for the good of all concerned. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I thought, let me give this a try with the car parking order. And that occurred, no problem. And then you can then, as I mentioned in the book, is I explain how to integrate that technique into your business infrastructure. So for example, I say in the mornings that when I do my cosmic ordering, I turn my goals into cosmic orders. Say for example, that I really would love to get one of my films into a film festival today. We've done all the submissions, so we've got, you know, plenty of seeds have been planted waiting for responses. So let's see what comes in. So I say, what I'd really want is for one of my films to be invited to screen at a film festival today, for the good of all concerned. Let it go, and then it comes in during the day. It can come in an hour later, halfway through the day, the evening, overnight, whatever. It'll come in, and then it's done. And then you get more results come in, happy clients, and it makes you really excited. So that's an example of putting it into your business infrastructure.
That's wonderful. And we both doing it in different ways. This program, for example, is called Abracadabra, right?
Mm-hmm.
Create what you speak. Abracadabra literally is in Aramaic, and it literally says Evra Kedabra, I create as I speak.
Nice.
Right, so this is one of the things that myself practice, and I know when you're saying that about asking for something and how it comes and how it manifests, I do the same thing, how things work and how things come, and the people that I meet that day, that week, what is happening that day, that week, you know, I can list things, and it is, it's just pure, you know, magic. No, it is pure magic. It is pure creation. It is creation.
Yeah.
And so abracadabra, you know, it's where we're talking similar languages, just different languages.
Of course, absolutely. I agree with that. Totally. You're right. It's a similar thing, and it's the same intention. It's the same good energy behind it. Spot on.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. You know, I'm really, really excited that you came. The book. Rebecca, we are. it's been when we're having fun, times flies. Time flies. We're towards the end. Last words that you can share with everybody about your book or about your work, about you, anything that you feel that comes to you right now.
So, for those of you who purchased the book, obviously very grateful and very pleased that you've brought it. What I would really love to happen is for every person that reads the book to feel that they got a lot of value from it, and they feel one step closer towards knowing exactly what it is that they're born to do, and they have the tools to do it, and actually they'll feel have the confidence to go ahead and do it.
Amen. Wonderful. Yeah, absolutely. Abracadabra.
Yes.
Create what you speak. Create that. Rebecca Smith, thank you so very much for being here. Author of the book Born to Do It, a filmmaker, and a film doctor, the film festival doctor. And thank you for you who have been here. If you are here, that means that you had to be here. Bring your light to the world, shine your light. Thank you, Rebecca, very much.
Thank
And
you. It's a
thank you.
pleasure.
It's a pleasure. And have a wonderful, wonderful week.
You too.
You're listening to Abracadabra, Create What You Speak with Ilan Azulay, only on LA Talk Radio.